Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks. When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Once again, this is Carson's Corner, and my name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you. It is Sunday, June 16th, 2019, and we are coming off Bellator 222 at Madison Square Garden. I have a lot to talk about here. If you want to call me, you can at 347-326-9749. That is 347-326-9749. We have the chat room open for you. We have the Facebook live stream for you as well, so you can chime in there. That is on my Facebook page. That's facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. We're on Twitter, twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. We're everywhere, folks. We are absolutely everywhere. So, as mentioned, you know, I went to Bellator 222. I applied for press passes, I don't know, about last month or so. I went to the Bellator Media Day, got some media interviews. This was back in April, and this was at the Paramount Theater, I believe it was. Very, very nice, nice venue there. It was in, I forget where it was. I think it was the Paramount building, very high-tech building there. They had the fighters face off. They had a luncheon for the media there. They had a nice video presentation. It was really, really a very, very nice to-do put on there by Bellator, you know. And they had Chael Sonnen. They had Neiman Gracie. They had Dylan Danis, Max Humphrey, Heather Hardy, Leoto Machida, and you know, maybe there was a few other people there that I'm forgetting, but it was nice. And I took my brother there, and we met an executive there from Paramount, and we got to meet Max Humphrey. My brother got to meet Max Humphrey, and he became friends with Max Humphrey there, and I got to meet Max Humphrey, and it was really, really good. Good experience. We drove into the city. There was parking right underneath the building. and went back to New Jersey. We were in there for about a couple hours, and it was a good experience. It really was. You know, it was a good way for us to meet people, get a couple short interviews, in and out. Okay, no big deal. You understand. Okay, it was really, really good. So we applied for press passes. I got in, okay, and all the while I had heard that covering press events at Madison Square Garden is not such an exciting thing for the press, okay? I had an experience back in May. I think it was May or April with the Anthony Joshua Big Baby Miller press conference. Eddie Goldman and I covered that. This was the first press conference kicking that off. Anthony Joshua, your call, was supposed to fight Big Baby Miller instead of Andy Ruiz, which he lost to. We know what happened there. And we went to the Madison Square Garden press conference. It was on the floor of Madison Square Garden. And Eddie Goldman and I went there. And this was hosted by DAZN. And Eddie Hearn was there. And all the dinosaurs in the boxing media. And we went there. And the staff there, the security staff there at Madison Square Garden, they were like freaking Nazis. They really were. They just were unpleasant to deal with there. The security detail was pretty vigorous in terms of how they searched us. And I don't mind that. Believe me, I'm all for safety. I don't mind being inconvenienced. I'm very, very easy to deal with. I'm very accommodating. I work in a semi-law enforcement capacity myself. I don't care. You do what you got to do. You got to search me and whatnot. So, you know, they just were like Nazis. Eddie Goldman got into an argument with a bunch of them, and he was right. Eddie turned out to be absolutely right. One guy told him he wasn't allowed water in. Another guy told him he was. They were giving him a hard time. They just were jerks to him. And they pretty much were jerks all the way around and whatnot. And so whatever, you know, they started us late, and we had to go up to the fifth floor, and you had to go through several different checkpoints, and they just were not pleasant to deal with. Overall, they were just were jerks, and they weren't pleasant to deal with. So, okay, whatever. You know, so, you know, Eddie told me that, you know, overall it's not fun. It's just terrible access for the media at the Garden, and it's not worth it. So I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. Maybe it's going to be different for MMA. I have never covered an MMA event or any type of an event at Madison Square Garden, and I want to see it. And Bellator 170 came around a couple of years ago, and that was Tito versus Chael. I'm like, you know, I applied for press passes, and they initially granted me press passes for that, but then they bumped me because they had too many media members there, and so I couldn't go to that one. But I got granted press credentials for this one. So I got excited. So I took off work, and I'm like, okay, I went up there. All right. So I went up there. I drove into the city, and I picked up press passes around 6 o'clock, 6:30 or so. This was a huge, huge fight card, you recall. This was on Friday, and, you know, the main card had 6 fights on it. The undercard started at like 6:30, and that had like 10, 12 fights on it. It was just a ridiculous amount of fights. So I drove in there because I like to drive into the city. It's easier for me to drive into the city than take a train. Yeah, it's more money, but I don't mind, you know, spending a little bit more money for the convenience. So I'll drive into the city. So I drove into the city, okay, and I park right across from the Garden, right there, all right? Yeah, it was $50 to park right in front of the Garden. No big deal. Again, I don't mind. I'll pay a little extra. I'll park right in front of the Garden. I park in front of the Garden. I go into the security checkpoint. I go there. The Bellator people initially didn't have me, but they had me under Bob Carson. So I go there. It's fine. They give me the laminate. They give me the press pass. I had a little difficulty putting the press pass on the clip because I'm an idiot. Like when it comes to assembling thing, putting things together, I'm like a mentally retarded person. That's just it runs in my family. I can't even tie my own shoes. It's embarrassing. So security guy, he saw me and he could tell he was getting impatient with me and says, so, why don't you come up here, pal? It was just kind of embarrassing. So I go upstairs. He puts it on for me. I take my laptop out, put the laptop in the bin, put all my stuff in the bin. We go through the X-ray machine. They want me, they search everything, and that's fine. I get my stuff. I go up to the elevator. They got a guy in the elevator. I'm waiting for the elevator, right? And all of a sudden, this freaking guy comes up for no reason at all. Doesn't even ask me. Comes up and just freaking grabs my press pass and looks at it. Even though they just searched me. Which is rude. It's like, come on, man, what are you doing? What is this like? You don't have to do that. I didn't say anything because, I'm not a stickler. I'm a nice guy and whatever. And so they take you up to the fifth floor. Now, I knew that in Madison Square Garden, they don't have press seating by the cage. I knew that they didn't have press seating even in the arena. I knew that they had press seating like what I thought was like one of the box offices. Okay. I got up to the fifth floor, right? They put you in this decrepit old freight elevator. I thought the thing was going to collapse. It was just really, really bad, right? And you're in the elevator with these disgruntled Madison Square Garden employees, and they're complaining about the event, and the event's going to get over at 1:30, and everybody, it's just the typical angst of workers, dissatisfied workers and whatnot. It was just very, very unprofessional, whatever. So I get up to the elevator, and the first, I open it up, and the first person I see is the shill Hawani, and I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me? And there's just like no room there. And then there's just the little tables. They got like two or three folding tables there. And I see that, Slob Morgan, and I see a couple other shills. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, this is it? This is like this is the media. This is ridiculous. I'm like, there's just this small, like maybe 32-inch TV, and just like a couple tables, and like I'm like, I had to get the hell out of there. I'm like walking past. I'm like, this is insane. I'm like, so I go to the end of the hall, and there's an attendant there. I'm like, is this where the media is sitting? The media is not in the arena. He's like, no, this is only for to go to the bathroom and whatnot. That's where the media is sitting. I'm like, what the hell is this? I'm like, I'm better off buying a ticket here. I'd rather go into the arena and buy a ticket and watch the fights, because you can't watch the fights at all. The only good thing about where the media was seated for this was that they bring the fighters out there. Like there was a Tiger Shulman fighter that was doing interviews there when I was there and so on. But that was it. It's like, what the hell? Why would anybody want to go and do that? It doesn't make any sense. You can't see the fights. You can't. There's nothing really, really for the media in that capacity. I mean, it's terrible. Like when I cover events, I'm usually at the cage side or very close to the cage or in the arena. And it's like you're up like and the fifth floor away in some room. And it's just the worst possible vantage point. And it's just stupid. It really is. I mean, I not to mention you're just around these friggin' people and, I just got the hell out of there. So I went down and then I went to the box office and I tried to get a ticket. And then I was, had to be greeted by this snot-nosed, another nasty garden employee that I wanted to smack and then I ended up going to StubHub and trying to get a ticket. And it was $86 for the cheapest ticket at the Garden. And then StubHub had one for $60, right? So I bought a ticket on StubHub. But then when it said that the transaction took too slow, and so it said the transaction didn't go through, right? And then I leave the garden, then I get an email saying my ticket was delivered. So I left the garden, and then I got charged for the ticket anyway, and the ticket turned out to be $77 with the service fee and everything. So I left the garden. I went back to my brother's house to watch, and I got charged for the ticket anyway. So I'm disputing that. I'll see if I win that. But it was just overall an absolute disaster. It wasn't Bellator's fault. You know, I'm not blaming them, but it's just I will never go to Madison Square Garden again for an event because it's just not worth it from a press person's perspective. It really isn't. You don't get to watch the event. You're better off watching it, you know, from a spectator's perspective or a fan's perspective or on TV. You know, why go to the garden to cover an event if you're going to be, you know, cooped up in some room, you know, with you know, three or four, you know, or on the tables and just it's just stupid. It really is. So. And I wasted, you know, $200. Overall, it was just an absolute bad day for me. But I learned my lesson. Eddie Goldman was right, ladies and gentlemen. He was absolutely right. It just wasn't worth it. It's not worth it for me. And I won't be making that mistake again. There's a first time for everything, ladies and gentlemen. And I certainly learned my lesson with that one. So I went home. I drove back to New Jersey, went back to my brother's house. He lives in Somerset, you know, which is about an hour and 15 minutes away, maybe an hour away from Manhattan. And sure enough, you know, there's traffic on the way back. There was an accident on Route 18, so I had to wait in traffic. But I'm glad that I left because, you know, ultimately, you know, that event, you know, they didn't get to the main event till about 12:30. So I would have been in the city for quite some time. But nonetheless, it was a really, really good card. I was very, very excited to see this card. And, you know, this is one of Bellator's strongest cards in quite some time. And so there were some real key takeaways to this card and not real surprising results here. You know, I think for the most part, a lot of people got the results correct. One thing I will say about, you know, some of the undercard fights here, Aaron Pico, I think, should retire at this point. I don't know that this sport is going to be sustainable for him in terms of his health. You know, I mean, Bellator, you know, you can make an argument that Bellator is giving him difficult opponents, okay, that they're not giving him easy opponents. Somebody posted that, you know, they're giving Dylan Danis easier opponents than Aaron Pico. I don't know if I buy that because Aaron Pico had more fights than Dylan Danis, and Aaron Pico arguably was pushed more than Dylan Danis. You know, they're talking about Aaron Pico as a title contender and whatnot, and you know, there's just a lot of hype behind Aaron Pico, and he's just failed to deliver. You know, Eddie Goldman said this a while back, and I, as usual, you know, I posted it, and I get ridiculed for it. But again, you know, I post unpopular opinions, and sometimes when you post unpopular opinions, you get ridiculed by, you know, the bandwagoners, the fickle people. But Aaron Pico probably should have stuck with wrestling, you know? I mean, he's getting clobbered out there. He's getting knocked out cold. I mean, he got knocked out by Zach Freeman, okay? He got knocked out, and then he got choked out, okay? He got knocked out, came to, then he got choked out, all right? Then he got knocked out again by, Henry O.K. Corrales? That was a bad knockout. I mean, and that was just a clean knockout. I mean, just, you know, it's just bad. You know, when you're seeing a guy that just getting knocked out clean at such a young age, you know, 22 years old, it's not good. It really isn't. And then, you know, this guy, this Russian fighter he fought, who I wasn't really, really familiar with at the time, Adam Borix, gets knocked out by a flying knee. It's not good, man. All of his losses are by knockouts. I mean, you know, I consider the Freeman fight a knockout loss. And it doesn't bode well for him. He needs to fight lesser competition or maybe go down to a lower promotion or do something. I don't know. But, you know, this has got to be concerning for him and his family. Okay? It really is. You don't know what's going to happen in 5-10 years down the road in terms of his brain health. You know, there's really no way to determine the extent of his damage, of the damage that he's sustaining, Aaron Pico. Maybe a wrong career choice for him. Who knows? But, you know, Bellator is taking a risk with these prospects, and they may not always pan out the way that they think that they may. Heather Hardy is another example, too. I mean, Heather Hardy, you know, says that you know, it's not her goal to be the best at MMA. It's not her goal to, you know, to be the best fighter. I don't know why she's fighting. I really don't know why she's doing it. You know, she's 35, 36 years old. She's a very, very good boxer. There's not a lot of money in female boxing. I just don't know, you know, what she's doing. I mean, she looks bad on the ground, you know. I don't know how much further she can go in MMA, you know, because she doesn't appear to be a prospect in mixed martial arts. I really don't think that she is. She's, what is she, you know, a 500 fighter now. You know, she lost to Taylor Turner. She didn't look good. She doesn't look like she's gotten any better on the ground. even with boxing, even with her striking in mixed martial arts, it's a different ball game. I mean, you can be a good boxer and amass a good boxing record, as she has, and win several world championships, and then get into MMA and, you know, not have the success, and just be you know, really, really kind of at a standstill. And that's what I think we're seeing here with Heather Hardy. I really don't know, like, what the end game is here. Supposedly she has a full-time job. She's able to make money. I don't know if this is a financial thing with her. I really don't know. Yeah, who knows? Maybe it's a you know, she's able to get a little promotion out there with Bellator. She's able to, maybe she enjoys just doing it. You know, I'm just trying to figure out what her motivation is, because I don't see her, you know, being a champion. I don't see her really, you know, making a lot of money at this. You know, who knows? You know, she's 500. That's it, and it's like, you know, it's a tough sport. It really is. But, you know, I'll have to see what happens with her in the future. She just looked bad. I mean, I saw the fight, and just does not look like she's gotten any better. You know, and I know she's training with Henzo, and I'm sure she's taking it seriously. But I really don't know what's going on there. I really don't. What else do we have here with some of the undercard fights? I didn't get the chance to see the undercard because I was traveling back to the great state of New Jersey, but I'm on different card now. I'm trying to go to Bellator 222. Yeah, oh, come on, fucking thing. Excuse my language here, ladies and gentlemen. All right, yeah. Yeah, so that was Valerie Lareda. Valerie Lareda beating the Hooters girl, Larkin Dash. That's another thing, too, that Bellator has gotten criticized over, is they're taking these everyday run-of-the-mill people and they're putting them up there as sort of like a pros versus Joes type of thing there. You know, they did this with that TJ Jones last couple months ago versus Jake Hager. And I don't think Bellator really minds, but they're receiving a little backlash. This Larkin Dash that they put against Valerie Lareda, this Larkin Dash, she had some amateur fights. She's a fighter out of Michigan. I guess fairly attractive girl, young fighter, 21, 22 years old. She wasn't that bad. Now, she got some criticism online, you know, for her striking, but she wasn't that bad of a fighter. And Valerie Lareda, I don't know how much of a prospect she's going to be. You know, she's, what, 1-2-0. I just think that Bellator, they're trying to push these fighters and trying to, you know, I just don't know, you know, what the end game is for them. You know, what are they think that they're going to be able to do? Are they going to be able to get the next Conor McGregor? Are they going to be able to get the next big thing? What exactly constitutes the next big draw? I don't know. You know, I really don't know what they're doing. I mean, they're smart people. Coker knows. I guess they know what they're doing. You know, I really don't know. You know, I mean, they did a good job with Kimbo in terms of making him a draw. Like, Kimbo was a draw. You know, I think Kimbo is one of the biggest draws in MMA. Maybe not in terms of ticket sales, but in terms of ratings, yes. Kimbo was a huge draw. But he wasn't the best fighter. Wasn't even close to the best fighter. So they have a method to what they're doing, Bellator. But I don't know, you know, what their end game is. But as I said, some of these fighters are not the best fighters, but that won't stop Bellator from pushing them, you know, and trying to make them into draws. But, you know, Valerie Lareda, she's a decent fighter, but I don't know that she's going to manifest into anything in terms of being the best fighter and whatnot. And yet she continues to get a lot of flack online. I don't know why. You know, I don't see why she gets so much hate. People question whether or not she's a real fighter, and they didn't like the fact that during the stare down she was shaking and whatnot. And I didn't see anything wrong with that. You know, she seems to have a positive mindset. She seems to have a positive disposition towards her opponent. I don't see anything wrong with Valerie Lareda. I don't know that she's going to be quite the prospect that Bellator's helping, but who knows? You know, I don't know why some people don't like her, but we'll see what happens. Then you got the main card. I happen to see all of the main card. And I was glad that Horiguchi beat Darian Caldwell. I was glad that Dom Cruz got the short end of the stick there. Okay? I really was. Because this was obviously a rematch. And, you know, Caldwell said he was going to use his wrestling to do a lot of damage to Horiguchi, who was at the disadvantage when it came to the wrestling. And, you know, Horiguchi was on a multi-fight winning streak. And, of course, you know, Dominic Cruz finished Horiguchi. And so there was, you know, a little rivalry there. But it was good to see that the judges kind of gave Horiguchi the victory there, even though he got the short end of the stick in terms of the positioning there. It was a good decision for the Ryzen champion. And a good thing to see. A cross promotional bout there, and a cross promotional champion there. So very, very proud to see that. Juan Archuleta, oh my God, what a knockout that was, huh? How can you not be excited to see that? And what's in store for Juan Archuleta? You know, king of the cage champion, multi-time champion. You got to think he's next for a title fight. You got to really you know, take your hat off to him and his fighting style. Just an absolute brutal knockout there. at the end of the second round over Eduardo Dantes. Patrick Mix, another prospect there out of Jacksonwick. You know, people were really, really high on him, and I didn't really know what to expect, but you know, I heard a lot about him going into this fight, and he definitely kind of lived up to the hype there, lived up to a lot of expectations. Let's go to a caller. We've got a caller from 646 area code here in New York. Not sure who this is here. Hello.
Who do you think it is? Who do you think
it
is?
Oh, my God. I was going to say, could this be the great one? You know, Eddie.
One was Jackie Gleason, but it's me, Eddie Goldman. How you doing?
Eddie, I talked about you at the beginning, man. You were right. I heard some of it.
Yeah, I didn't hear the whole thing.
It was a disaster, man. I went to the Garden. Okay. I got press passes, and the security was an absolute nightmare. I mean, they were like when we went to the Jarrell Miller, Joshua press conference. They're absolute Nazis. Just went overboard. With the checking, they were kind of nasty, disgruntled, blah blah blah. Okay, fine. That's whatever. So, I went up to the fifth floor that we were in this freight elevator. First person I see when I open the door is the Shil Hawani, whatever. They had him like sort of segregated from the media, and then there was a few folding tables, and they had this small television on the fifth floor, and saw all the usual suspects. And I'm like, you know what? This is like my worst nightmare. This is exactly what I don't want, because there was just no, like, there was no vantage point. You're cooped up in this room, and it's real small, and it's just like, I'm like, this is like a waste. Like, what the fuck am I doing here? You know, this
is terrible. Where did they have you, in the media room? What they do sometimes with the media is that they put them upstairs in what's called the press box. And it's
right.
Very high up. It's almost at the very top. But I haven't been there in a couple of years, but they had monitors there where you could watch the show. And you could actually watch other channels too, which is crazy, you know, that they have that on there. But the point is that it's not, unless you're ringside, it's not set up for fights, because the last time I was there was in March of 2016 for the NCAA Division I Wrestling Championships. And you're all the way at the top of the Garden, and you have two guys on a mat wrestling. I mean, they look like ants. You can't really see anything. And so what I did for the finals is I went into the lower of the two media rooms where they have like a little interview room, because what the NCAA did was that after each weight class wrestled, the winner would come in, and sometimes with their coach, and do the interviews. But by that time, then a lot of times the next match was going on, so they had a big TV screen, and you sort of had to, you know, pay attention to what the interview and the discussion, and also what was going on in the next match. And sometimes they kind of overlapped. It was just awful. It's not set up for fights.
Right.
The press box area is for hockey or basketball, where maybe, again, I don't cover those sports, but I could understand you may need a large overview for those sports, since things can move quickly, you know, from one end to the other. So maybe it makes sense there, and you could catch the close-ups on the screen. I don't really know, but for boxing or MMA or wrestling, it's absolutely awful. And not to mention a lot of people tend to get treated in a nasty way and all of that kind of stuff. So unless you're going to be seated ringside, and they limit the ringside seats, by the way, to only a handful, because they like to sell those tickets. They make money, but those are the very expensive tickets. So if you cut out four or five rows of media people and you sell those tickets, those are like $1,000 or whatever. I mean, I don't know what the prices were, but they're bringing in thousands and thousands of extra dollars that way. So it's it's terrible, you know. So I don't, you know, I'm just not going to too many places, too many of these events anymore these days. I've been to enough of them over the years, but they just made it more and more difficult, especially at the Garden. And the other thing about Pico.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No. Well, so you make a good point. So, and I just want to preface this because it depends on the venue. I don't want to suggest this is Bellator's fault because, when I cover events at the last time I was at Mohegan Sun, the press vantage point was fine, was perfect. But so what you're saying is
I was there a couple of years ago with you there, and if they put us any closer, they'd have to have way us in or something. You know, it was about as close as you can get. You know.
So because Madison Square Garden, it's typical, you know, with NHL, it's a different sport, basketball, different sport, that it's not applicable for fighting is what you're saying.
No, I'm saying that I don't cover those sports. I'm not in the media. I haven't spoken to media people there. So I could understand that it might make sense for those sports. So
yeah.
I'm not criticizing it in general. But for the fights, you need to be ringside for those. The same thing with wrestling, too. You need to be there to really see what's going on. But it's not set up for that, especially when they designed the new Garden. It's just not set up for that. And whatever. So that I'm not a big fan of going to the Garden. It always is a hassle covering that place. You know, who knows what's going to go on with there. The thing is, they have the reputation. Everybody says it's the Mecca of boxing, and the promoters will say, oh, Muhammad Ali fought Joe Frazier and all the great things that have gone on over the years, and they use that reputation around the world, but it's not a media-friendly place for most, you know, for fights and for wrestling.
No.
Yeah. The other thing about Pico, I didn't see the whole thing. Somebody put up a short video of him getting knocked out in this latest fight.
Yeah. Right.
And he's shooting in like a wrestler with his head exposed, where his opponent comes in with a flying knee that he should have been able to see a mile away. He also, the way his head was exposed, if he was going up against somebody who wanted to, he could have gotten easily caught in a guillotine choke or something like that. And if this is still happening to him,
right?
You know, it's not like he started fighting yesterday. You know, he should think about doing something else because I don't see how he's ever going to amount to much. Even though he had a background before he got into professional MMA, he did have somewhat of a diverse background. He's not cutting it. And if guys that are not well known in Bellator are knocking him out left and right, What does that say about his potential? And I don't know, at 22, maybe too late, you know, for him to think of getting recruited by a D1 school. And I also don't know, because of the NCAA's crazy rules, the fact that he's fought professionally, whether that means he can't compete. I don't know how that works. But he could, say, go to freestyle at Greco and go to the Olympic Training Center. But, you know, I just don't see how these people go into MMA, including, you mentioned, Heather Hardy. They go there because they feel there's potential. There's not a lot of money in women's boxing. Only for a handful of women is there a decent amount of money. And even then, nowhere near close to what the top level men are getting. So I understand that she wants to get more fights, and she goes back and forth between boxing in MMA while she still can compete professionally, while she's still more or less in a prime. But I don't see how Pico's going to get anything from it. But a lot of these wrestlers go into that because they think the chances of getting anything in wrestling are very slim. They don't want to do fake wrestling. And so for real professional wrestling, there's just not a lot. There's not a lot of, you know, the real professional wrestling groups have one after the other failed. unfortunately, but that's what's happened. And even the chances of becoming an Olympian or dealing with the whole corrupt Olympics and the UWW and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, losing some controversial match 3-2, you know, over some phony official or whatever, the chances of even making the Olympic team are very, very slim. The U.S. has a tremendous amount of talent, and you see the people on the Olympic, competing for the Olympic team, you have, you know, the Olympic trials, people with 2, 3, 4 NCAA championships going up against each other. These are tremendous wrestlers, only going for a small number of weight classes. So I can understand they're not wanting to get involved in that, especially with all the politics of that. But I don't know whether it's too late for him to do it. He could, even though he's fought professionally, that will not be a problem with him competing on the international level in wrestling. But I'm not sure, but he's not cutting in an MMA. He's just making basic mistakes. And it, you know, there's an old friend of mine. One of these days I'm going to get permission to use his name, but an old great wrestler and coach who's in the Hall of Fame and all that said, the problem with wrestling is that it's run by wrestlers. And that's been the big mess with any kind of real pro wrestling. They don't know how to do it professionally. I mean, John Peretti talked about years ago in 97, his terrible experiences with USA Wrestling and the Contenders, which is a grappling event. They haven't gotten really any better in all those years. And the combat sports in general have expanded all over the place. So they don't have the opportunities to do that. And there are some small, real pro wrestling groups, I think, have been in India and in Germany, and there are small local groups in China that use the Chinese traditional styles of like Shuai Jiao, but you don't have anything, any professional organization or league you could go into like boxing or MMA. So the wrestlers go into it, and some who are great wrestlers have limited or no success in MMA. It's same thing with grapplers. I mean, I remember Hodja Gracie. Hodja Gracie would go to the ADCC, and a lot of these matches ended up tied or somebody winning, you know, by a referee's decision. He was choking everybody out. He was submitting everybody for years. And you had Andre Gavon was another one, just destroying people in grappling and jiu-jitsu. Well, when these guys went to MMA, they were just mediocre because they couldn't deal with the striking. That's the way it is. And the same thing is true with a lot of wrestlers too. So I just don't know that Pico is going to be able, despite he did have somewhat of a boxing, I think he did some pancration matches, he did have some of that background, he's just not cutting it.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, with Heather too, I don't understand. You know, with Pico, I'm just worried too about his knockouts. Like he's, you know, what's going to happen to him 10 years? You know, he's got, you know, basically in a sense, 3 knockout losses and he's getting knocked out clean. And this is just really, really bad for him. So what is he going to do? How long does he want to keep this up? And with Heather, she's not getting any better on the ground. She's 37 years old. She's not getting any younger. It just looks like, I don't know what she wants to do. You know, it's like, you know, so I don't know, you know, but, in any event, you know, it was quite an experience for me. I think it was a one and done as far as Madison Square Garden events for me. I can't say that I enjoyed it. It was really the only good thing with Madison Square Garden is they actually bring the fighters up to you. They from what I saw, they'll bring the fighters up to the press room. They had a press conference there, a press room there. That's where Chael and others did the post fight press conference. And Bellator usually does that. And That's where, you know, every major MMA organization does. They have obviously a post-fight at press conference and whatnot. So that was good, but I just didn't see any type of reason to continue there. And it was unfortunate. It really was. Neiman Gracie, as you know, fought in the World Grand Prix semifinals, losing to Rory McDonald, a unanimous decision there. There's a lot of questions about Neiman Gracie as far as how good he was. Kind of unproven. I mean, 9-0 going into that fight, but unproven. You know, his last fight was a victory over a Ed Roof via rear naked choke, I believe. But
Ed Roof is another example. Three-time NCAA champ at Penn State. Somebody who maybe he could have become an Olympian, and he gets choked out.
Yep.
Another risk.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know that it's MMA has become a viable alternative for wrestlers anymore. You know,
some do well. I mean, if you look at the top athletes all over, you have an enormous amount of wrestlers that have won championships or former wrestlers that have done well. Daniel Cormier, people like that have adapted to it. And there are a lot more of them. Ben Askren, Woodley, on and on and on. You could go back years. You know, Mark Kerr, Mark Coleman, Randy Couture. It's, you know, and other people came from wrestling. Tito Ortiz was for a while anyway a D1 wrestler. Even Chuck Liddell had been a D1 wrestler. That wasn't his main background.
Yeah,
a lot of the Japanese people, Sakuraba, had a real wrestling background. You could list a ton of these guys that have done really well. But some of them that's my point, is that some of them who are great at wrestling or jiu-jitsu or grappling aren't going to be able to make the transition.
Yeah. That's a different,
and that's why I'd rather see them wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it's a different animal, I think, nowadays, too. You know, with the UFC and the pay structure and just the ways to make money. I mean, everything is just completely different now. I mean, it's always been a very, very tough business for wrestlers and MMA fighters in general, but you know, who knows what's going to happen out there, and who knows what the future holds. Eddie, what about you as far as what you've been doing? I know you've been focusing on boxing. You were covering the Tyson Fury Thomas Schwartz fight.
I saw it after the fact, because as I said, shortly after the fight, I wasn't going to get ESPN Plus. I got enough of these things, and I've heard some bad things about ESPN Plus in terms of trying to access. I was told they don't have on-demand replays, where DAZN does.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you don't see the fight live and you want to watch it later, you just go there and you click on it and you watch it. I heard that they only have scheduled replays. Now, I don't know if that's so, but so I have enough of these things. I need to cut back between, you know, the cable channels and all these things. I just need to cut back rather than get another one. And I didn't see that much on it that I really wanted to see. Plus, I knew an hour or two later after the fight, it's up on sites like Daily Motion, and you don't have to worry on a site like Daily Motion or YouTube of getting a virus or, you know, malware or anything like that, as you do from these pirate streaming sites. So maybe it's a pirated video, but you don't have that same problem. Plus, I could do other things when that fight was on too. You know, I didn't have to just watch it when it was on. But it was a total mismatch. It was designed to be a showcase fight and a mismatch because Tom, his name is pronounced Schwartz, the German pronunciation, which I tried to get, you know, on the conference call for the media. I got them to point that out, but most of the people, the announcers, didn't want to do it. They just wanted to call him Schwartz. And that's, you know, that's not right. That's not the guy's name. You know, say the guy's name properly. But he's never been an A-level fighter. He had a built-up record fighting local guys, none of which were even remotely close to any world level or top 10 or anything like that. And you could tell from watching his other fights, he's slow. He had all kinds of problems. And it will be a field day for a guy like Fury, who, especially for a big 6'9 heavyweight, has mobility, has fast hands. And so when you watch that fight, I mean, in the second round already, Fury didn't even have to keep his hands up because Schwartz couldn't touch him. And there's this one scene where Fury's on the ropes and Schwartz throws about four punches right in front of him, and he can't land one. Just by simple head and body movement and footwork, Fury was able to evade all of those punches. So he had no idea what to do. If you get in that situation, you know, you might want to work the body. It's much harder to get your body out of the way. But he just wasn't anywhere near that level of a fighter, but it was done as a showcase. I don't know how much of a showcase it was, because I was reading that the announced attendance at the MGM Grand Garden was only a little over 9,000, which is not a lot for that level of fight. And they had it behind the paywall of ESPN Plus. So I don't know how many people signed up, and that's why I posted on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram today kind of joking about churn. How many people did sign up, you know, Friday or Saturday and cancel their subscription? Because that's been a big problem for all these streaming services is churn. They'll lose maybe a quarter of the people that sign up anyway. How many felt, you know, I paid $5 to watch a two-round fight that was a mismatch that I knew who was going to win ahead of time, to hear Fury sing a song afterwards, you know, Aerosmith or whatever it was, and then and then for him to come out, you know, dressed like a clown with the, was it Apollo Creed or Uncle Sam kind of outfit. How much do you really, how important was that to see that stuff live?
Let me ask
I don't know what I don't know what it did. Maybe eventually we'll hear some numbers, but
the media reaction.
This is what's supposed to happen. The top rank is the master at putting on mismatches.
The media reaction to that was, they basically said that their conclusion, boxing media, was that his performance against this guy was greater than Deontay's performance against
That was a mismatch too, although Brazil at least was a fringe top 10, maybe top 15 guy, something like that, because he had beaten some top 15, top 20-ish type people before, but he had been on the canvas several times before in fights. So he had been in the canvas of something like the previous five fights that he'd been in, and that made 4 out of 6. So I considered that one, you know, that went as planned. It didn't prove what they said it proved.
Right.
You know, so you've had, in 5 weeks, you had 3 top heavyweight fights. 2 of them were mismatches. And one of them was the huge upset with Andy Ruiz Jr. stopping Anthony Joshua, who looked lost even before the first bell. But it was obviously a huge upset, because before that, almost everybody had Joshua as the number one heavyweight in the world, and Ruiz is a long shot. I said before the fight, Ruiz belonged in the top 10 ahead of Brazil. But in the lower part of the top 10. And it was a tremendous upset that he won. Particularly, he won in such a decisive fashion. But I don't know what will happen in the rematch. It was just something off about Joshua the whole fight.
Yeah,
you could just see there was something wrong when he walked to the ring, when they were doing the ring announcements. They're massaging his neck. He's leaning on the ropes. He's kind of looking out into space. This is not the way most fighters are when they're fighting for the heavyweight championship of the world. They're ready, they're all psyched up. The adrenaline's going. They're ready to go. He looked like he was ready to go to sleep.
There was rumors that he got knocked down before the fight in training.
I didn't give any credence to those rumors that there's no proof and what happens in training. A lot of people get knocked down in training, trying certain things that don't work out, whatever. The question is, I'm just looking at what he just looked awful in the ring. I gave the first two rounds to Ruiz because I felt he was just throwing more and better punches. And with Josh, it wasn't just a feeling out process with him. He just looked completely off. He's fighting with his left hand down. What is that about? He hasn't done that before. It's just I said on my show, it's like he had amnesia, forgot how to box.
Yep. Well, we'll see.
But sometimes there are rematches, and it could go totally differently in the rematch. We'll see. We don't know. But now the rematch is going to be absolutely huge because all these questions we're asking, was something wrong with Joshua? Is he going to be better this time? Ruiz obviously is going to be more confident, but he also did get knocked down in that wild third round. How are both guys going to adjust? We've seen rematches before. Lennox Lewis lost to Oliver McCall and to Hossein Rockman. He knocked him out. After that, we've seen Vladimir Klitschko, got knocked out a bunch of times and he's able to adjust. What will Joshua do? These are all intriguing questions since this loss is so unexpected.
Yep.
They could hold this fight. They could hold this rematch anywhere, and it's going to be really huge.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. Well, listen, Eddie. Thanks for calling in. Tell people how they can visit your show or give any information out there.
You could go to my blog at eddiegoldman.com, or you could find me on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. I use the NHC News there, or just search me out, or get in touch with me, follow what's going on, and we'll see what happens. I'm not sure what the next podcast is going to be. I might do a follow up on the Fury fight. I might do some other things in the works too, but something will be coming up. Just keep on exposing all of the nonsense that we see day after day in the combat sports.
Somebody's got to do it. Well, listen, thanks so much. I appreciate you calling in, and we'll talk to you sometime down the road, Eddie.
Thank you. Take care, and let's get together soon.
Absolutely. Take care, Eddie.
Take care. Bye bye.
All right. Thank you very much. Sorry about the live stream. I don't know what happened. It crapped out. I always have problems with the Facebook live stream. It's something with my connection. I don't know. But a lot of people listen. Thanks, Jerry Millen, Rob, Miguel Rodriguez, Lisa, Renee, a whole bunch of people out there on the Facebook live stream. I apologize. It crapped out, ladies and gentlemen. Big thanks to Eddie Goldman for calling in. Please make sure to follow me on Facebook. Just actually friend me on Facebook. Just type in facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You could follow me on Instagram, instagram.com/BobCarsonMMA. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And thanks a lot. We're going to try to get some guests on maybe on Tuesday. I'm off on Tuesday, so maybe we'll try to get Max Humphrey on the program. Or some other people. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.